Most reggae fans know Bob Marley. Fewer know Lincoln Sugar Minot. Yet without him, dancehall might never have existed. In the late 1970s, Jamaica was changing fast. Sound systems ruled the streets, and the ghetto youth demanded something raw, personal, and immediate. While major labels chased international fame, Minot opened his own doors, literally. With a microphone in one hand and a vision in the other, he built Youth Promotion, a studio that wasn't just a label, but a movement. He didn't just make hits, he made stars. 10-year-old Little John, a hungry Junior Reed, even a shy tenor saw, all came through Sugar Minot's battered studio doors and walked out as icons. Yet behind the music was a rebel spirit, shaped by poverty, defiance, and deep love for the ghetto. So why was Sugar Minot almost erased from the global reggae story? And how did his DIY empire quietly shape the entire future of Jamaican music, from roots reggae to trap dancehall? So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Hustler with the Sweet Voice. In Kingston's Maxfield Park neighborhood, the air was thick with zinc dust, ganja smoke, and bass lines from makeshift speaker boxes. Lincoln Barrington Minot wasn't born into music. He was born into struggle. Like many of Jamaica's ghetto youths in the 1960s, Minot hustled to survive. He'd shine shoes, carry boxes, anything to earn a few coins for bread or studio time. But when he opened his mouth to sing, people turned their heads. His voice, smooth like syrup, sharp like truth, wasn't ordinary. At just 16, he joined the African Brothers, a roots harmony trio with a strong Rasta message. They recorded militant songs like Lead Us Father and Mysterious Nature. But as reggae shifted in the mid-1970s, the demand for trios faded. Undeterred, Minot went solo. His breakout album, Live Loving, 1977, changed everything. Live Loving wasn't roots in the traditional sense. It was warm, personal, almost sensual, and it was recorded over recycled Studio One rhythms. This was versioning before the term had a name. Coxone Dodd had closed the doors of Studio One to new singers, but Minot raided the vault, revoicing classic rhythms like Real Rock and Swing Easy with new lyrics that spoke to ghetto life, love, and liberation. The streets went wild. His songs played nonstop on sound systems like Kilimanjaro and Gemini. Tracks like Vanity, Oh Mr. DC, and Jar Jar Children became instant classics. But Minot wasn't done. He saw what others didn't. The ghetto was overflowing with talent. Kids with no shoes, no education, but a fire in their throat and rhythm in their bones. He opened a tiny studio called Youth Promotion, where he let these same kids record for free. This wasn't charity. It was revolution. Out of that small room came voices like Junior Reed, who'd later lead Black Uhuru Lil Jon, whose raspy, high-pitched delivery helped define early dancehall tenor saw, whose haunting anthem, Ring the Alarm, became a genre-defining moment. Youth Promotion was more than a label. It was a launch pad. Minot would often fund pressings out of pocket, promote on sound systems himself, and even build speakers when money ran low. He was a singer, producer, engineer, and father figure, all at once. He gave the youth their voice, and in return, they gave Jamaica a brand new sound. But not everyone loved what Minot was doing. The reggae establishment saw dancehall as a threat, too raw, too slack, too fast. Minot stood in the crossfire, defending a sound that hadn't yet been named. As he toured the UK and spread the Youth Promotion movement abroad, powerful forces back home worked to erase his legacy before it was even fully written. And then, like a whisper in the static, Sugar Minot disappeared from mainstream view. Chapter 2. The Father who was almost forgotten. By the mid-1980s, dancehall had gone digital. The Sleng Teng Rhythm, a cheap preset from a Casio keyboard, flipped reggae upside down. Suddenly, analog roots bands were out. Producers like Prince Jammy and King Tubby embraced the future. Artists like Yellowman, Ninja Man, and Shabba Ranks were rising fast. But one thing remained. Nearly all of them owed a debt to Sugar Minot. You'd hear it in the phrasing, in the attitude, in the rhythms they voiced. Sugar had built the road. Even if others were now speeding past him, he didn't fight it. He adapted. Songs like Herbman Hustling and Rubber Dub Sound kept him relevant. He fused his lover's voice with gritty truths from the street. He even collaborated with newer artists, refusing to gatekeep. But the global stage, the one reggae once commanded, had shifted toward the polished crossover artists. And Sugar Minot, who refused to sanitize his sound for the pop charts, was often left behind. Still, he never stopped. He poured every dollar back into youth promotion. He helped even more young voices record their first singles. His work with early Buju Banton, Garnet Silk, and Luciano helped revive roots reggae when dancehall grew too commercial. Then in July 2010, just days before another overseas tour, Sugar Minot passed away from a heart condition at only 54. Jamaica mourned. Tributes flooded the airwaves. For a moment, the island remembered just how much he gave. But outside the Caribbean, his name faded quickly. Why? Because Sugar Minot didn't chase fame. He chased truth. Because he didn't wait for permission, he built his own studio. Because he didn't protect his spotlight, he shared it. And in the world of music, those who empower others often go unrecognized. But listen closely. Every time a new artist voices a classic rhythm, every time a ghetto youth touches a mic and tells his truth, every time a sound system pumps raw energy into a Kingston night, Sugar Minot lives again. So now the question is, why wasn't he given the global recognition he deserved? And who else has been quietly written out of the history they helped build?